Welcome to the Zimcast, a program dedicated to bringing you what's new in agricultural marketing. The Zimcast is the official podcast of AgWired and hosted by Chuck and Cindy Zimmerman.
Hello and welcome to the Zimcast. I'm Chuck Zimmerman. I'd like to thank the sponsor for our program, and that's Growmark, locally owned, globally strong. In this week's program, we are going to talk about some of the new technology that was on display actually at a consumer show. And I think it's something that we have found over time that a lot of these gadgets and some of this technology that maybe is initially created for consumers and having consumers in mind winds up having some real agricultural applications. I have with me John Schutzke. He's the Associate Dean for Extension and Outreach Programs at the University of Wisconsin College of Ag and Life Sciences. And so, John, welcome to the program, first of all.
Well, thanks, Chuck. It's great to be on here.
Well, you are a person through Twitter. We communicated that you were at the 2015 CES show in Las Vegas, and we want to talk a little bit about some thoughts you have on that and what that might mean for agriculture. So some people may not be familiar with CES. Tell us a little bit about the show itself first.
Yeah, well, Chuck, we did connect by Twitter. I was I went out in advance of the actual formal Consumer Electronics Show. There was a conference out there on sort of new developments in broadband technology, which is real exciting and interesting for people who work and live on farms or in rural areas that tend to be underserved with broadband. And so we connected on Twitter, and I know you asked me to be part of this here today, and I did certainly tied in. As long as I was in Las Vegas, I tied in two full days at the Consumer Electronics Show. I believe it's one of the biggest conferences and trade shows of its type in the world, if not the biggest. I think this last week when I was out there, they were talking about having roughly 170,000 people. So the Consumer Electronics Show kind of takes over the entire, you know, downtown and the strip part of Las Vegas. If anybody's ever been out there, it's a huge area, 170,000 people, more than a million square feet of exhibit space. I think there were people there from 105 different countries exhibiting and showing and you know, walking around and looking at the wares that were being demonstrated. So it's pretty impressive. And the thing is, there's a lot of things out there that you probably have seen and heard of. You know, companies that are Ford Motor Company, for example, probably had one of the biggest displays. But there are things that are sort of everyday technologies that we're all knowing about and using. But then there's some stuff that's kind of wild and wacky. And I was out there as an agricultural engineer to absorb it a little bit and figure out where might some of these technologies be further deployed in agriculture. And so it was fun. It was an interesting two or three days. I didn't actually get to see the whole thing, and it was a good experience.
Yeah, a show that big, I can only imagine how much time you would need in order to see everything. I follow it usually year to year through a couple of different technology news sites that have reporters there, and it's still my goal, hopefully, to get to one of these shows at some point. But looking at what some of the things you saw, I think there were a couple of technologies in particular that caught your eye that would really have an impact on ag. So tell us about a couple of things that you saw that you think might it would be good to bring to people's attention to kind of know that this is something that's coming.
Yeah, well, a couple of things I think are really interesting, and actually I caught this in this broadband discussion. There was a lot of discussion about what's going to happen in the next probably 4 to 5 years as we move. People who have smartphones, a lot of people have either 3G or 4G, the fourth generation of smartphone and mobile wireless technology. We're going to be moving by the year 2020 to have a fully built out 5G system. And I think, you know, going from 4G to 5G, 4 to 5 is like a 25% increase. And it's not going to just be that. It is going to be something that is truly revolutionary. The data speeds that they were talking about, the manufacturers who were there, like Ericsson was a gentleman from the Ericsson company that makes mobile telephones, was talking about seeing data transfer rates within 4 to 5 years 100 times faster than what we currently see. And hopefully, even more deployment in areas that are underserved now. Again, in the United States, that includes many of our rural areas and rural communities. So that was pretty cool. And I think, that gives us all kinds of opportunities to be using mobile technology and cameras and sensors to be collecting data and transmitting it centrally or to the cloud, and being able to use all of the data that we can use with these new and innovative and in some cases very inexpensive sensors to make better decisions on the farm and to increase efficiencies and improve our energy use and all kinds of different things. So I'm actually pretty excited about this whole 5G thing. I knew a little bit about it, but that was a big aha moment for me when I was out there.
Yeah, it not only is something that is going to increase things like speed of data transfer, but we'll have other benefits that I think are very important for those who are, say, out and about a lot. That could be on their farm or traveling. And one that a lot of us battle with, and that's things like battery life. Battery technology is going to get better at the same time. And frankly, some of the smart phones, for example, that are out now already are kind of being built with the idea that 5G is something that's coming. So, things that we might be looking at, maybe we are a little frustrated, things don't work quite as fast as we want. If because we're already seeing some advertising even for 5G coming. I think we just don't even know what it's going to be like yet until we get to experience it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a week since I was out there, and I've yet to kind of get my head around, like, what is possible. I think right now, even, some people don't really, if you have even an older iPhone or one of the Samsung, Galaxy products, if you have a smartphone, in some cases, people aren't aware of just what you're holding there in your hand. I'm often told that we have more computing power in a single one unit of an iPhone than what existed in the entire Apollo space program at the time that people landed on the moon back in the late 1960s. Like an iPhone has a Bluetooth device, it has a GPS, it has a gyroscope, an accelerometer, and Wi-Fi radio. And these are all devices that are quite powerful and quite, things that would take up entire rooms back even 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool, and I think one of the things that I discovered at the Consumer Electronics Show, I thought there would be a lot more. Well, there was some weirdness to it. There were a lot of like, oh my gosh, are you serious? Where is that ever going to actually be put to use? But I think that our companies that are putting these products out on the marketplace are very much aware that they need to think about products that are going to help people do their jobs more effectively, help them make money. Help them improve relationships, whether it's a business relationship or a family relationship. I just give you a quick example, not necessarily with the Consumer Electronics Show, but later this afternoon I'm going to a family event here in Northwest Indiana, and I have my two parents and two of my sisters who are out in Phoenix, Arizona, and so I'm going to be able to do a nice high-quality video and get it posted up on YouTube. And you think about that sort of thing, was that even possible 15 years ago? And no, it wasn't, but they're going to have that sort of virtual sense that they're there with us, and it's not the same as being there, but again, a big focus on improving people's lives and not just putting out a bunch of stuff for the sake of innovating.
Right, and there's, excuse me, for something that we've just started using, this is really not all that brand new, but I use a Nikon DSLR to take photos at an event, let's say. It takes great photos. As much as I love my iPhone, it takes better photos than my iPhone because the lens is bigger than the iPhone itself, But having a Wi-Fi-enabled memory card inside the camera that's not Wi-Fi enabled itself allows me now to pull those pictures instantly to my phone, to share those and share very high quality photos through my social media, which enhances, in my case, you know, the sharing, the coverage that I'm doing of this event with other people. And, you know, that was not something that's been available for that long, but now, of course, cameras are becoming more and more Wi-Fi enabled themselves to allow you to actually take those and share those photos directly out of your camera, even connected to Wi-Fi. So, you know, these kinds of advances seem sometimes to be kind of like, well, you could just take that out and put it in your camera. But the idea that I can instantly now do something, do it faster, it enhances my work, my job. That's an improvement, in my opinion, you know.
Chuck, if I could just bring it back to agriculture, and if anybody's going to go out in the future, it is a great experience. It's a bit on the pricey side, actually more costly than what I expected, but I think it would be an interesting experience for anybody involved in agriculture, whether you're a producer or a machinery manufacturer or whatever your role might be. One of the things I would recommend, though, is they had things organized around what they called marketplaces. So some examples of some marketplaces that I really wanted to spend some time in, one of them was called the Smart Home Marketplace. And again, if you think about it, there are a lot of things that happen in your home, your energy use and your lighting and whether or not people are up and moving around, security, temperature. I sent you some notes. One of the things that I found very interesting is you can now kind of monitor what has come into your refrigerator and what has gone out, and it helps you with shopping and things like that. So this smart home space was quite interesting, and I know that there are a number of people who are working on similar types of sensors and software and devices like that for smart farms. And I think that's something that we need to pay attention to. And I think that thinking about smart farm technology and using some of these new devices is going to make a difference for people being able to be competitive and control the costs in their operation. So even though we didn't see anything at the show that was smart agriculture or smart farm, it's very easy to see that there's some real applications. And then the other one that I found interesting was a marketplace, the whole space of wearable technology. One that I know you're familiar with is the Google Glass, wearable, like a heads-up display that comes through a set of glasses. You know, there was a little bit of that, but the other thing I saw was being able to wear technology that measures anything that's going on in and around your body. So blood pressure, weight, temperature, body mass index, your movement, your exercise intensity, that is all pretty cool, and there's some really fast advancements, not only with the wearables, but also the apps that collect and interpret and help you make smart, oftentimes they're kind of health-oriented decisions about all this data that's coming from your body and the environment around your body. As I think about that applied to agriculture, those same technologies have fantastic applications in the future for livestock and for other animals that are on farms. Being able to think about using the data about whether or not an animal's moving around, their temperature, their stress, perhaps their stress level, as is indicated by some environmental parameters. And I think that that's going to be very important. We start talking about things like animal health and animal well-being. I think our consumers are going to continue to demand advances in that area. So that's one that I'm still trying to get my head around what exactly does it mean. And I wonder if in 10 years we're going to see at the Consumer Electronics Show similar types of devices that we can use with our animals. That was an interesting part of the show for me.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, going specifically to agriculture, I think you also noticed this might not be what we call traditional production agriculture, but there actually was some technology focused on probably what would be oriented more to what an individual might want to do in terms of growing plants, say at their home for their own use, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there were a couple things. First of all, there were systems that help people with, water management on their lawns and out, in their yards, things like that. There were also a number of exhibitors and manufacturers that are beginning to look at, very, very small scale, like what might fit in your basement or bedroom, greenhouses where you can, presumably grow herbs or other plants and really totally optimize their growing conditions, soil fertility, water management, lighting, all the environmental parameters that affect plant growth. And again, using software to fully optimize those conditions. I actually have some suspicions about some of the motivations and, some of the marijuana legalization arguments right. that are coming up. I think there was actually some fairly overt mentions of those kinds of potential future applications. Right. But, I think for people who are interested in growing high value, whether it's herbs or even, in a small space, vegetables and other products. But, probably not entirely revolutionary, but that was a direct agricultural application. The other one that you and I talked about a little bit is, we've heard these stories about 3D printed food. There was a whole marketplace on 3D printers, and only a tiny part of it was 3D printed food. But, 3D printing is going to be a revolution that I think we don't really fully understand how it's going to affect agriculture. We talk about being able to 3D print metal or high-strength plastic parts for machines and things like that, rather than having to wait for a shipment of a part to come across the country, actually being able to print it out in the field if that's needed. I think that's actually a couple decades away because there's going to be a lot of work needed before that happens. 3D printed food, they had this little exhibit. They were printing like with a protein substance. I would say it probably looked like extruded like bologna, but they were little dinosaur shapes and other things to try to get kids to eat more meat or cookies and cakes. And I think the one space where we see 3D printed food probably it's going to catch hold fairly quickly is in the candy industry, where you can print like layers and interesting 3D, three-dimensional candy products. And then also people that make wedding cakes, you can print like really cool lattice structures and really intricate three-dimensional designs. So I think we'll see some of that. I think anybody who's afraid that we're going to have all of our food 3D printed and replace, some of the traditional food products that we all love to eat, I don't see that happening anytime soon here.
Well, one key area that is of real interest in the agricultural sector, and in fact, in an interview I did at the end of last year, this individual said 2015 would be basically the year of the drone, these unmanned aerial vehicles. That was definitely on display there, that technology.
There was a lot of drone technology. I was actually surprised when there was a whole marketplace focused on drones. And we've seen quite a bit of this in the media, and I know you've written about drones and those sorts of things. A couple of things about drones that we saw advances there. I saw several companies that are working on, I guess I'll call them not solar-powered, but solar-enhanced drones. We actually have one in our office that we can take out to like an agricultural field day and fly around and take video and photos and things. But the battery life on our drone is limited on the high end to about 15 minutes. And if you have a solar panel on the drone, perhaps being able to extend that to double it or triple or even quadruple the battery life by enhancing it with solar power. So that's something I think we need to kind of keep our eye on. There's several different technologies that were really very much in the development phases. There was a pair of individuals, two young men who were there from Europe that were working together. One was developing a drone piloting software that would allow you to fly one of these devices really from any place in the world using an internet connection. Now, obviously, the military's already got this figured out, but we don't see any applications like that in the consumer or certainly in the agricultural space, but it is being worked on. And then he was working with a young fellow who is developing little landing pads so that you can, in a very inexpensive way, you can have landing pads that actually double up as a solar-powered charging unit. So the drone actually has little electrical connectors on its feet, and when you land on this landing pad, it will charge the drone and have it ready for its next flight. So you can kind of envision having a field where the four corners have a solar-powered charging station landing pad, and you can sit in your home office or on your cell phone or wherever you're located, control the drone, go out, take your flight, collect your data, make the observations, do the scouting that you need to do, take it back and land it, and maybe go out and check on it once a week, but not have to be out there in the field physically piloting the device and doing all the things that we now have to do. So that's pretty interesting, and I think that one is not too far away. I think we're already going to be seeing some companies deploying these. I know Amazon is talking a lot about home delivery of products using drones and unmanned aerial vehicles, so they're pushing the envelope a bit. And then we also hear about companies that are developing this sort of application in developing areas of the world where you have to deliver small packages, medicines and vaccines and things like that, and actually flying these aerial devices out, delivering the product, and then flying them back in areas where you don't have roads and good transportation systems. So just a lot of stuff happening with drones. I don't even understand the full potential, but it is out there.
Yeah, I think we haven't even scratched the surface on that. Another area that I know I saw a lot of stories being focused on were some of what's happening with some of the new automobiles that are being manufactured. Maybe a lot of those right now are just kind of prototypes, but things like a driverless car, or at least, you know, pretty autonomous in terms of a lot of functions. You know, we can see how things like auto steer for our tractors and stuff, there's a fair amount of this kind of type of technology that's going on in the ag sector, but a lot more is being done, even just in the consumer side, that may again have cross purpose into another industry sector like ag.
Yeah, the whole auto steer autonomous driving thing, it probably is actually one where agriculture's maybe even been out in the lead a bit more than what we realize. But you're right, there were several of the big auto manufacturers made a big splash. The show actually officially started on Tuesday last week, but they made a big splash on Sunday and Monday, having their totally driverless car that drove in from Los Angeles. I think one of them actually drove all the way across the country and, you know, made this big entry into the show in a driverless car. And so that's something I think that we're going to be looking out for here probably the next, I would say, 5 to 10 years. I'm a little bit more skeptical. I think especially when you begin to drive across state lines, that there's a lot of coordination, a lot of regulatory thinking that's going to have to go into the whole concept of driverless cars. For example, if there is a traffic violation, who gets the ticket? Just as an example. And I'm being a little bit silly when I say that, but those are the kinds of examples. There's liability issues and all sorts of insurance implications. But I do think it is something that we do see coming. Actually, what's interesting is even though a lot of the barriers and skepticism about driverless vehicles is around safety, it's actually the selling point that a lot of these car companies are using is that ultimately a computer-controlled car with a computer-controlled driving system is touted to be more safe than a human driver. And while I certainly can see that in the future, I think we're a little bit of a ways away from that. Lots of things in cars, sensors that monitor all aspects of your car's driving and drivability, not only telling you if your tire pressure is low, and Chuck, obviously we have that kind of technology now, but also helping you make decisions about trade-offs. If I wait another 500 miles to get my oil change, what's the potential cost of that going to be? So not only collecting data about your car's performance, but also helping you make decisions and you know, spending your money wisely and some of those sorts of things. The other thing we saw with the car manufacturers, and again, I think I shared some notes with you on this, we heard the car manufacturers talking a lot about partnerships. For example, the CEO of Samsung not obviously not a car manufacturer, but talked a lot about his partnerships with BMW and some of the other car manufacturers. I think anybody who owns a new Ford product, you see in that the Bluetooth technology and the software that's been integrated with Microsoft interests. And so a lot of partnerships, I know that those same partnerships are happening in our ag and farm equipment sectors, but partnerships are a really big deal. And the companies, the entrepreneurs and inventors and maybe even investors that are out there, I would really be looking at partnerships, looking across sectors, because I think that's really where the when you get out of your silo, so to speak, that's where a lot of this innovation seems to be occurring.
Well, all of these things we're talking about involve a simple four-letter word, and that's data. And, you know, we talk about big data, volumes of data, the issues of security, ownership, things like that. But as we see a continued explosion in these types of technologies that are so data-driven, this is only going to grow, and it's really not so much, you know, collecting it and finding a place to put it anymore. That, I think, only just continues to become not a problem, but there's easy solutions for it, but then it's how to use and interpret that. And I think we are seeing, even in the ag sector, the need for companies that can take that kind of information and somehow put it into a form from which you can make smart decisions then.
Yeah, again, Chuck, in the last 15 to 20 years, our ability to collect the data, as you suggest, is just it's overwhelming what we are now able to generate, literally overwhelming. And as we look at, you know, all of these, again, we go back to this 5G conversation and being able to collect all this information with all these sensors and the Internet of Things, we literally have the potential to just, drown in this data. And not only do we need to take a snapshot today to help us make a decision on data that was collected yesterday, but we're going to have to be looking at that data almost in real time and making decisions on the go and on the fly if we're really going to capture the full value of what is being developed. So there were a couple of speakers. I found this very interesting. They used the analogy that we're kind of like where we were back in the mid-1800s. We had known for several centuries that crude oil was potentially a fantastic energy source, but we really hadn't figured out how to make full use of it until around 1840, 1850, when they began to develop the refining processes and ways to distill crude oil into its different fractions, whether it's gasoline or kerosene or a lubricating oil. And so the analogy is that right now we're trying to invent the distilling factories and the refining processes so that we can make optimal use of big data. And again, there are a lot of companies that are really thinking about this. We haven't seen the kinds of advances that we'll need to see here in the next decade or so to really make full use. Again, I always think about, okay, if I'm going to invest some money or invest some time, I think data analytics and companies that can not only help us to collect and store the data, but also to really make use of it and glean the types of information and wisdom and actually help toward making actual decisions and things that help us to make full use of the data. That's where a lot of the action is going to be in the future, and I think that's where we need to put a lot more brain power as a country.
Well, before we close here, since you saw a lot of gadgets that, like you said, some had some possibly hard-to-understand purposes and things like that, but if you looked at all of that technology that you saw, what would you, if you could answer this question, what would you most have liked to have been able to walk away with to take home with you that you either didn't or couldn't?
Well, that's a great question. So there, and this is probably not an agricultural example. There was a company there that was selling a, it was basically, think of a fishing bobber, And that fishing bobber had a really sophisticated depth finder integrated into it, and that depth finder had Bluetooth. So yeah, think of a bobber with a depth finder and Bluetooth that sends a signal to your smartphone, and the app that they were selling with this depth finder bobber also was integrated in with the Weather Channel and lake maps and GPS. And all kinds. So I actually have to go back through my notes and find this company. I do have an excellent idea for a future Father's Day gift, and I have to say that's probably the one that I would go for. as I repeat the story to you, I actually get goosebumps because it was pretty exciting when I saw it. It was also one of those products I saw afterwards. I thought, you know, I could have done this. I mean, they obviously have probably put, you know, thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars into the development. But it was really, again, this idea that it was the integration of several different ideas and partnerships and kind of out-of-the-box ways of thinking. That's where a lot of the cool stuff was, where you were getting out of the silos and integrating these different ideas. That was a take-home for me.
Well, let's put it this way. There are a lot of people who farm, who also fish, and so it doesn't really matter always that a particular device, gadget, has a direct application for your farm as it might be for you personally. So
that's right, and fishing obviously helps us with stress management and health and happiness and all kinds of things.
So every chance I get. any other thoughts before we close just about, you know, whether it's the show or just, you know, from the area that you work in, especially in terms of when you look at this year coming up or that we're already in, things that you saw, things you're working on that you think are really kind of the big issues when it comes to the newer technologies for ag today?
Yeah, Chuck, that's a great kind of, you know, way to close. You mentioned in the lead-in that I serve in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the University of Wisconsin, and my focus of work is extension and our cooperative extension system. If you'll bear with me for just a second, you know, extension's been around for a long time, more than 100 years. We just celebrated our centennial a couple of years ago in Wisconsin. There was an institution at the Consumer Electronics Show which I think has a fairly similar history, long history in the United States, and that was the post office. Hmm. And I saw lots of things happening at the post office, them really trying to look at technology, looking at the ways in which they do business, looking at themselves as an institution that helps to improve people's lives through the transmission of information. And that transmission of information does not have to just be packages and letters that are sealed in envelopes with stamps on them. They're looking at all types of, again, new types of apps and applications and ways of delivering that information from person to person to help them improve and maintain a high quality of life in this country. So I'm actually quite interested in figuring out now how's the post office thinking about this. Extension, I think, has a lot of competitive advantages with a lot of different groups and organizations, but the post office is also partnering. The post office is looking to be more creative and looking at ways to employ this new technology in sophisticated ways. And I'm really interested in doing that in a cooperative extension. I think we have a great possibility and future ahead of us, but I think we need to really think about how we make best use of these technologies, but also how we help others to make best use to improve their businesses and improve their lives and improve their families' well-being.
Yes, good point. And although I don't farm myself, that doesn't mean that I don't have the need of extension services as you know, a homeowner with some land and also involved in a hunting lease, for example, on a large piece of property and needing help. Probably in part because of not being a full-time, you know, farmer growing up doing that, but I've always seen and had great uses of and had great experiences with a lot of my extension friends too. Well, that is great information. I hope to have the same opportunity at some point in the future to personally visit the show and see some of this myself. But, you know, in today's age of communication, it's been interesting through that show to watch some of the places that I look at, like Engadget or CNET and some of the others who are right there on the scene reporting just like we do from agricultural events. So, yeah, it's
my recommendation, Chuck. I mean, so having seen it myself, I can't see myself going back there. And it's not just a financial thing. It's, you know, once you've seen one one iPhone case, you've seen, you know, there were millions of iPhone cases as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I when I would get back to the hotel room each night, I would look at Twitter and I'd look at the media. Yeah, you can actually follow a lot of this virtually with some of our new you know, media companies that are covering it. And but I do think it's worth, you know, once every 5 to 10 years to try to get out there. Do bring your sneakers. Be prepared to walk a lot. Bring quite a bit of cash because lodging is super expensive. But it is something I think everybody ought to have the opportunity to take advantage of.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, John, for visiting with me here and talking about new technology as it was on display, as it is each January, especially with this show, and talking about some of the ways that some of this is either possibly or already having applications in the agricultural industry.
It's been fun.
So that is the Zimcast for this week. I hope you have enjoyed it, and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Zimcast, the official podcast of AgWired. Check us out at www.agwired.com to find out what's new in agricultural marketing.